Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast. Much like the Winnipeg Jets, struggling for consistency. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend, who's lying in bed, just like Ryan Wilson did, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
I'm not lying in bed. I've been up and about. I was out shoveling today. I haven't done much today. I don't have much to show for.
But, I was by your place. Your boys were playing hockey in the driveway. Good for them. They took a couple shots on me.
As I asked them, any strange-looking men come in onto our yard, take some slap shots at their shins?
One of them hit me, two-handed me across the back of the head with a stick, but I didn't want to mention anything. I thought Vaughn's trained them well. Kudos to him.
I don't know if you've noticed their sticks. Their sticks have been ground down so that they're
like
just little slivers.
At the end.
Yeah. That's just from taking, thousands of slappers on the pavement out front.
Well, thank you, Vaughn, for joining me. We're doing our first bonus podcast. We wanted to do two things, I think. One, test out our new audio system, and two, begrudgingly talk about the Colorado game that just happened, the massacre, and I don't remember a massacre like that in Colorado since,
too soon,
too
Mike.
Soon.
Too soon.
I figured as much. I did also want to shout out my daughter. My 7-year-old daughter now has a podcast.
Oh, nice.
It's called,
really?
It's called Go Jets Go. It's on her voice memo on her iPad. And it's 3 minutes. It's a little more succinct than ours. It's 3 minutes of her telling the Jets to pass the puck and to hustle. And you can hear it nowhere except her iPad. And she's already told me that she has more subscribers than I do. And I'm pretty sure she's right.
Well, good for her. I mean, she does have more personality than both of us put together. So I'm not surprised. I know that she just exudes charisma. And I wish her all the best. We're gonna keep going in our little chaotic journey here on our podcast. But speaking of chaotic journeys, let's go back to the Jets and what is left of this season. I mean, obviously, after a game like that, whoever is going to speak on the Jets, we've often said that our podcast is a love letter to the Jets. This love letter will not be the same as other love letters.
Poison pill.
Not quite grounds for a breakup, but not helping matters either. It was... it was an interesting game, just super quick, and then...
Yeah, do all sets of picks here. You go, because you did a whole diatribe there on Twitter, which was good.
Yeah, I just felt there was some things I actually liked about the game. Colorado was really forcing the Jets to skate. They're a team that was in constant motion. The Jets like to play... very slow hockey. They very often move stationary person moving the puck to another stationary
time
person.
In between, yeah.
Yeah, and they almost let their guard down at times. They relax at times while on the ice, which you shouldn't do. And Colorado really forced them to play in a different way. And obviously, we couldn't keep up over the course of 60 minutes. But there were spurts and things that I saw that if applied going forward, I think will be
better
for us.
I didn't see that.
No, I do felt for stretches that like just forcing us to play away. And one of the things I wrote on Twitter was the last thing I wanted to hear from the Jets after this game, regardless of how it ended, was, we're just going to throw that one in the garbage.
Yeah, good point.
And move on. No, watch that.
Study
that tape. Yeah. And we talked about this a little bit after the Carolina game, how much we enjoyed watching Carolina play. Don't bin those games and move on and forget about them. Watch them over and over and over, because that's how hockey is played in the 21st century.
Yeah, good teams.
Watch how these teams are playing and emulate those teams, okay? Don't just move on. Don't just bin it. Don't hide your head in the sand and expect things to change. Watch that tape over and over and over. Watch how they played and watch how you played, because there were You know, I do think that many of the goals against the Jets were simple, momentary lapses.
Yeah.
You know, and I think those can be corrected. So I didn't see the game as utter domination. Clearly, Colorado is better than us. They have better players that play a better style of hockey, without question. But it wasn't. It wasn't 60 minutes of domination. The Jets...
We started out pretty slick.
I thought the first period was okay. We were out shooting them.
Yeah.
And then there was a lull for a period of time. And then even in the third period where I felt that we played as well, if not slightly better than them, they simply capitalized on their opportunities or forced us to make errors and capitalized on those quickly and easily.
And Hellebuck didn't have a stellar game. No, he didn't. You know, we've been saying for a while, right, that he needs to be at A1 levels or we're exposed to a certain extent.
So that was my big takeaway from the game is that, we've had a couple cases this year where we've come against an opponent that is just fundamentally playing a different brand of hockey than we are. And we've talked about it too much 1991 hockey in the Jets game. Ooh. And that's all from Paul Maurice.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a lot of good things to say about 1991, mostly music related.
Yeah, I was going
to
say musically, absolutely.
But I don't like what the Jets are singing these days in terms of their play. They got to learn to play faster. They got to be more detail oriented. All the things that we saw from Colorado. What was your take, Mike?
Absolutely. And I got wildly discouraged. I'm gonna transform my podcast personality to more of a Skip Bayless and just say I told you so.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna go back to back I told you so's because what I feared. And articulated, I hope anyway, on our last podcast, was exactly what happened. Is that for all the reasons that you stated, is that we have, and it's a culture thing, we have sort of transitioned or ingrained in us sort of the slow play. When we play talented players who move the puck and talented lines that move the puck, this is what happens. We get pumped. And we got pumped. Mm-hmm. Again, some of the goals, I think Hellebuck on a good day, might have stopped, but there was no way we were winning that game, and it became evident fairly clear or fairly early. So I couldn't agree more with your sort of framing of this in that it's a learning lesson. And hopefully Dave Lowry sits the boys down and says, if we want to have any hope of winning anything of any meaningful consequence this year, this is how we're going to have to play. And these are, here's XYZ in order to do that. If we don't, we're not done, but we're gonna middle, 50-50 chance. I think the NHL has it as about 34% chance to make the playoffs and dwindling, right? Yeah, it was unfortunate. I tuned out a bit on the third after the fifth goal. I was like, I can't do this. You said, I was a scoring lover here.
You know, I didn't like that seventh goal. I felt that they were trying a little bit too hard at the end there. Like it is because it's such an emotional journey for me. When I watch hockey, I have trouble being rational. Like when I'm a football coach and those things happen in a football game, we immediately go to, listen, it's our job to stop them. Right. If another team is scoring up a late touchdown, we coach our guys, listen, don't get mad at them. They're not running up the score. Yeah. It's our job to stop them.
But
right?
There is an underlying,
yeah.
I don't even call it an etiquette or code of conduct. There's a, you can ease off the brakes 20% or ease off the gas, 20%, and no one's going to be the wiser. I didn't like that either. And if we ever face them again, I hope we respond in kind. Not that I think that we'll be in a position to
race them curious... like this, but yeah. You know, the curious thing of the retrograde hockey that Paul Maurice, like, there's been a number of times this year those types of things have happened, and there's been no pushback from the Jets.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? They just kind of go, meh. And so, which is kind of weird. You would have thought that a Paul Maurice coach team would have pushed back. And the reason I bring that up again is, listen, I know Paul Maurice isn't around anymore, but that type of, response would have been ingrained in them and still, but again, it hasn't been there for some time. You know, something I came across today, and this was a bit of a, a microcosm for this. I feel that, you know, our opponents are making good on a lot of chances they get, and the Jets are not. And, you know, Jay Fresh. From Top Down Hockey.
He's good, by the way. Check him out if you're ever on Twitter.
At Jay Fresh Hockey.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's really good. So he posted something about goals scored above expected as of January 8th.
Oh.
And the Jets are minus 12. So, you know, I guess what that looks at is where the Jets are creating their chances from, their shot profile, and how that would typically translate into goals. And what the data suggests is that on average, the Jets should have 12 more goals than they do. At the top end, you do have the Colorado Avalanche, who have scored 20.7 goals more than so they're really and you know, if I, you know, I don't exactly remember where the Jets were, but the Jets were more towards the top 10 or even the top 5 last year when they weren't generating shots. They were really running on a high shooting percentage, XDiff, and here things it's the same guys. Like, what, Matthew Perreault was driving our axe diff? Like, I don't know. Like,
Matthew Perreault drives everything.
Yes.
I kid.
He drives a Tesla. And here we're sitting 27th in the league, you know, around some other really challenged teams. You know, to put it into perspective, I'm just quickly looking at it here and looking, like, Arizona is way above us. You know, they're minus 0.8. You know, so who's another bottom dwelling team? Buffalo is 8, almost 9 goals above, you know, expected. So
okay, this is bumming me.
We're a little snake bit on that, I think, and because I felt it was into 7-1 game. Like, I'm not making any suggestion that the Jets were in the game and they could have beat Colorado on that particular night. I'm not saying that. I just didn't feel it was a 7-1 game. I feel the Jets did enough to quote-unquote deserve more than one goal. And I felt that the 7 goals for Colorado were somewhat flattering for the way they played. You know, it's a 5-2, 5-3 game. They should win that game the way it was played 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
They're an elite team.
Fair enough, though. I get your point. And it's, you know, good for you to derive some optimism out of that, because I certainly wasn't in that headspace of... I'm a bit more receptive to your argument now, and you're absolutely right. The stats bear it out. But at the end of the day, you know, your original point, I think, was the best one, is that they play with a sense of speed and purpose, and Caroline is the same way, that we're overmatched systemically. And I think we have the players and the personnel properly utilized to keep pace. We just don't play that brand of hockey. And until we do, I think that's... more often than not, that's going to be the outcome.
One of the things I liked from the game was I'm really pleased that they're keeping Ehlers and Scheifele together.
Yeah, me too.
Despite their obvious lack of natural chemistry. And they're just...
kind of like us, Vaughn.
Exactly. But that's been said for many years. Listen, if Scheifele and Ehlers stick together as long as we've been friends, they'll demonstrate a lot more natural chemistry
than
we are. Yeah, they'll figure it out. We're still trying to figure it out. But I was able to see they're starting to read off each other a little bit better now.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see who the third person is on that. I suspect it'll be Wheeler when he comes back, which will be somewhat unfortunate, because I do think that then that just means that all of Scheifele's attention will be turned to trying to create plays with Wheeler again, and the third person.
Yeah, he becomes myopic with Wheeler. They always have eyes for each other.
Exactly. And I really do think that the reality now is forcing him to look to bond and to create with Ehlers, and forcing them to sort of, you know, figure out each other in that way. And Scheifele did have a pretty good month of December. They were mentioning on the broadcast, I think he had 15 points on the month.
And
if you extrapolate that over 6 months, which I think, let's say October, November, December, January, February, March, and a touch of April. So, you know, 6 times 15, that's 140. No, I'm just kidding. You know, well, 6 times 15 is around, that translates into around, you know, 90 or 100 points. So it's a pretty decent pace. So I do think that he's back from his early season of struggles.
I agree. Well, I think onward and upward. I wanted to, right before we part for the bonus episode, I've been trying to force feed this bit / idea through Vaughn for weeks, if not months now.
Let's do it.
So Vaughn's begrudgingly agreed to do it. I don't know why I enjoy these exercises, but I was randomly just trying to put together, if I had to piece together a starting lineup for Jets 1.0 or 2.0, any player at any position, start five. And Vaughn, you made a good point prior to when we started recording. Is this your favorite player or the team that you think would fare the best or the most talented? And I've got both. But the way I was looking at it is the most talented. Like, what's the best roster you can you could dress? So I'll start it off. The center, obviously, Dale Howard Truck. I don't need to say too much about that. RIP. I know I had wondered as part of this exercise if your emotional heartstrings would get pulled towards Shifley. But then I figured, you know, I think you said it best, is that Dale Howard Truck's in the Hall of Fame. So I think that's a no-brainer. The left wing, I had Tkachuk. Right wing, Timu, obviously. Right defense, Byfuglien. And then lefty was hard, but I went with... I'm a Phil Housley guy, so I went Housley.
Ah!
Yeah.
Brilliant. Those are great selections, which, you know, those selections don't really speak well to Jets 2.0 because there's none of them there. That's so true, I think the listener should know what the real motivation behind this is. It isn't to do something interesting for the podcast that no one listens to. It's simply for Mike to force me to have some sort of permanent record for me to say that Mark Scheifele isn't my all-time favorite or isn't the all-time best Jets center.
You Sherlock Holmes the shit out of that, Vaughn.
I know.
That's exactly the purpose of this bit.
And I meant you, my dear Watson.
Because he knows that... I won't just say Shifley for the sake of saying Shifley.
No, you have too much integrity for that. I'll give you that.
I have too much integrity for that. So I agree that at center it has to be Dale Howardchuk. I would give, you know, listen, in my heart, in the Hall of Fame, in my heart, it's Mark Shifley.
Yes,
there you go. But the one in my brain is a little bit different. I would give an honorable mention to Alexei Zamenhof.
Right, good pick.
I think he had incredible talent, one of the most talented guys ever to don the Jets jersey. I think at right wing, Timu Selanne is a no-brainer. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer. It irks me that we had this Hall of Fame player and we traded him for some unknown reason, and then we don't learn. Like, it's the most Winnipeg story of all time. We are then, 25 years later, gifted another scoring machine.
Yeah, from the same country.
Same country, even. And we have to go and make the same stupid mistake. Listen, I like this Pierre-Luc Dubois. You know, there's... Sorry, I won't get off on a tangent. I like this Pierre-Luc Dubois. I'm not sure we're a better team with him than with Laine. As much as I like him, and I sincerely do, watching Laine was a special treat for me.
It really was.
And I miss that guy. I really do. Me too. And I cheer for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I really
do. Yeah, and I've really come around. I've 180'd it. He's one of my favorite Jets now, but I agree. The experience of watching Laine and the fact that at any game he can score four in quite spectacular fashion, it's irreplaceable. And he was so young, right? I think his ceiling is higher than PLD's. Maybe that's tough to say, but it's just the, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just fans. And as a fan, I enjoyed the Laine experience more than I do now enjoy the PLD experience.
Yeah. Back to left wing, it's really hard to go against Keith Tkachuk, although I think when all is said and done, to go back to right wing, you know, in terms of a longitudinal impact, Blake Wheeler's got to be there.
He was. Like, I had him first, and then I will be perfectly honest, I didn't think of Timu, and then I was fact checking myself, and I was like, oh, Yeah, no, it's Timo. But Wheeler, just off the top of my head, was my first pick for that, quite honestly.
And the tough part is, you take a look at the long-term impact that either, and it's Timo was here for three seasons, and he's universally loved, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and that sort of clouds our view. Mm-hmm. I don't think Wheeler was ever as loved as Timo was loved.
No.
But as in terms of an impact on the ice, well, obviously Wheeler's had the greatest impact of any right winger in Jets history because he's, you know, scored the most goals, got the most assists, and all of those types of things. So, you know, I would begrudgingly place him ahead of Line A in terms of impact on the Jets.
Me but too.
It's really hard not to give that nod to Timo because he's a bona fide Hall of Famer, although most of that Hall of Fame career took place outside of the Jets.
Yeah.
Take us back to the left wing. Hard to argue against Keith Tkachuk. I really didn't like him. I did not like him at all. He was a hard guy to cheer for. Oh, I'd have him on my team though.
We need some of that. But...
yeah, we do. But yeah, I do think that's a really good one. I think I was just getting to this point when I went back on to Wheeler. I think Nick Ehlers is going to make. He's going to be there, and Kyle Connor. Like
right.
Both of those guys are going to be knocking on the door, legitimate discussion as to whether, you know, whether they're a better long term player than Keith Tkachuk or not. So I think on our left side, we're really, you know, blessed. Yeah, we're really blessed. Although there's some, you know, is Ehlers really a right winger? Should he be playing on his left side? Anyways, love your defensive pairing. I think Lars-Erik Sjoberg should be mentioned in there.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit before both of our times, but the little I've read really stressed how good he was and how he was.
Good for you. Way to pull that out.
Tremendously underrated. I was a massive Phil Housley
yeah,
fan.
Me too.
Again, a super elite guy that Mike Smith didn't want to pay, so we ran him out of town. You know, it's just like, and then all
do
of a sudden,
you see a pattern here, listeners.
I don't know what's wrong. Like, something about this place is we just hate nice things.
No, we got
to
give them away.
And once we're gifted nice things, we have to learn to hate them and then fall in love with really clunky objects like a Keith Tkachuk. And like, those are the things
let's
we
pay
need
him
to keep
a lot.
Around.
Keep him around.
Ugh. Anyways, and goalie. Hey, let's go
right.
Goalie. You didn't mention goalie.
Sorry.
I think hands down, there's where Jets 2.0 comes in.
Yeah.
It's Connor Hellebuyck.
It has to be.
It's not even close. No. I don't think. Don't go anywhere. Don't give me this Pub that sends us stuff or anyone else.
No.
It's Connor Hellebuyck. If he continues, he might be borderline discussion for the Hall of Fame.
It's two, three more seasons like this, and
yeah.
He will definitely be in discussion. Now, I think some of that, you know, if the Jets made a final or obviously won the Stanley Cup, I think that's a no-brainer. He's going to struggle a bit because our lack of playoff experience, but just pure stats alone and the fact that he's been able to run off several really good seasons in a row, he's getting there.
Here's one for you, Mike. Who coaches that team?
Coach.
Who is the best coach ever
for
the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, given just how successful I was at the trivia question that you laid at me, I just have a plethora of ideas. It's can I say who it's not? It's not Paul Maurice.
Okay, who's better than him?
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
That's right.
Here's the thing.
We haven't had really
who's
a lot of...
Who's better than him?
Damn it. Good question. You're right. You painted me in a corner. Good revenge by you.
Hang on here. List coaches, Winnipeg,
Jets.
Because this is not a...
It's not a murderer's row of
talent.
Oh,
no. Oh, no.
Hmm.
Well, we have Robert Marvin Hull. That's one.
Yeah.
No.
I don't think it's cloned well.
Here we go. Well, Rudy Pillas. He was the guy that said, don't take Gretzky, by the way. Apparently, that was part of
that
the
That should
internal...
be on your tombstone.
Yeah.
That's morbid.
Bobby Hull. Well, he likes the Nazis, so he's out.
Also, probably drunk.
Like Tommy McVie. I'm not sure he could read. Bill Sutherland, Mike Smith, Tom Watt, Barry Long, John Ferguson, Dan Maloney, Rick Bonus, Bob Murdoch, John Paddock.
Oh my God, it's Paul Maurice, isn't it?
It is. He's literally the most progressive person of that entire list.
Now I thought this last bit would be uplifting and a bit of fun. Now I'm bummed again.
Okay, so if we just look at winning percentage,
it might be Maurice. Actually, well, I shouldn't say that. I have no idea.
Bobby Crom had a .621 winning percentage, won the AFCO Cup World Trophy in 1976. Yeah, yeah. Huh. Ooh, Bill Sutherland. All of these guys suck.
Can we keep... My thought is that I don't want to get rid of Phil Housley, but could we have an alternate, and it's Carlisle on D, and he could be a player coach?
He's worse than... I would take Maurice over Carlisle 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
You know what?
I'm struggling, man. I can't let it land on Maurice.
Paul Maurice has a .576 winning percentage. Yeah. It's right in here. And 601 games, 315 wins. Like, he's literally the best coach. Oh, my God. I need to go drink. Mike, this podcast is over. Paul Maurice is the best coach we've ever had.
On that note, thank you, Vaughn, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the bonus episode. We don't need to do the regular sign-off. That was perfect. Vaughn's going to go down a bottle of whiskey.
At least one.
All right, go Jets, go.
Go Jets, go.